Nice to see you, everyone, this afternoon. So I'm going to take us a little bit back to where Miriam started us at the beginning. You've all heard a lot about the challenges to public health posed by plastics across the life cycle. The question is, how can an international treaty help us deal with this challenge? So you'll all recall that back at the UN Environment Assembly in 2022, there was this affirmation not only of the global risk of plastic pollution, but also a recognition of their implications for human health. So when the Assembly adopted a resolution to negotiate an international legally binding instrument based on a comprehensive approach that addresses the full life cycle, the challenge that went to all of us is how do we ensure that protection of human health is taken forward in how that treaty is negotiated? So at present, governments and observers together face this challenge of, if I can click, no clicking is happening, of how do we ensure that the treaty addresses the scale and the complexity of the plastic pollution challenge, recognizing that it's a cross-national and cross-border challenge. And in doing so, how do we make sure that it addresses ambitiously, effectively, fairly, and in a balanced fashion the challenges of the impacts on public health? So in good news, across the negotiations, a diversity of governments from all regions have supported the idea of an objective for the treaty that is both the protection of the environment and of human health. The challenge we have is that the amount of emphasis after that sentence on how to operationalize the protection of human health has not yet got the attention that it deserves. And I think that was something that Miriam highlighted at the beginning. Why does it matter? It matters that it's in the objective because what is in the objective will shape not only the implementation, but the evaluation and the development of the treaty over time. So it underpins and shapes the kind of coordinated action that governments will pursue. So beyond the objective, what we also need is the treaty to operationalize protection of public health. And in our work, we think about this happening in four ways. The first is that the treaty has to have provisions that directly address some of the known health impacts. So one of two examples of this is that we will consider health in measures that seek to limit the most problematic and harmful plastic products and that address the design of plastic products. We'd also want provisions on the management of waste to address the health impacts linked to the management of waste. Second, in terms of the treaty, we know that this is a treaty that will need to develop over time because, as many speakers have mentioned, we'll have new scientific evidence, there'll be new developments over time. So the treaty is not for 2026 or for 2030, it's for decades to come. So we need a treaty that has a decision-making process and set of structures that will enable us to improve it over time, to respond in particular to science. The third thing is that the treaty, we'll need to, too many slides, what am I doing? It's going the wrong way, wow, that was the end. Sorry, okay. So the third thing is the treaty will have to have mechanisms to ensure international cooperation. That's what a treaty does, it spurs governments to work more closely together. It's not just an action plan, it's a plan for international cooperation and coordination. In that respect, financing, capacity building, and other elements like technology cooperation are really critical. And they will need to be grounded in what's needed for health, not just for the environment. And then finally, the treaty will need mechanisms that can help us improve availability of information. So this is around transparency, reporting, and monitoring of impacts on public health over time, so governments have the data that they need. So quickly, two specific examples around treaty measures of what they could do. And here I'll get back to the picture. We know that from what other speakers have said here, that some of the most significant health impacts are linked to chemicals in plastics. So we need to make sure that when the treaty has provisions on products, that those provisions are specifically designed to protect human health. So we can do so by ensuring that any criteria or requirements address not just environmental impacts, but safety impacts and circularity in product design, ensuring safer products over time. We need to make sure that provisions require the disclosure of information about chemicals in products and on the material composition of products so that governments can manage risks. And we need to ensure that we have ways nationally and through global measures to phase out those products that we know are the most harmful to human health over time, including those with chemicals of concern. We also have a second key opportunity. I'm not up to sync with my slides here. We have another critical opportunity, which is for a dedicated provision on human health. So we need health integrated across the provisions, but it's also useful to have a dedicated article. Over 90 governments at the last negotiating session supported this, and that kind of provision can play a key role in catalysing specific cooperation around public health concerns, so around scientific information, building institutional capacities, addressing the health impacts of vulnerable communities, frontline communities that many here have mentioned. So my last message here is that we need to keep health at the centre, not just at the international press, in academia, we need to keep it at the centre of negotiations, and we need to make sure that governments are supported in their efforts to make sure that public health is reflected in the particular provisions that they negotiated, in order that we operationalise what I think is a shared ambition to ensure that the treaty protects our environment and also human health. Thank you.